an Israeli soldier was killed in Al-Quds. This occurred after four Palestinians were shot dead in an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank. Now, whether these incidents are related remains to be seen, but at this point it shows that when a Palestinian wants to act against Israeli forces, it can do so, aside from this being a reaction due to Israeli repression. In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at why the Israeli-Palestinian conflict remains at the heart of the decades-old conflict in West Asia and how Israel continues its flagrant violations of Palestinians. First, let's cross on over to occupied Ramallah and talk to Mona Kandil about what has occurred. Mona, at this point, tell us the numbers that have been injured, both on the Palestinian side or killed, and also on the Israeli side, and where things stand at this point.
Well, we have to mention that the manhunt for the Palestinian man, or the suspect, Israeli state, who is behind the shooting, is still underway. Yesterday, a Palestinian get out of a vehicle at a military checkpoint at the entrance to Shafat refugee camp in Al-Quds and opened fire at the Israeli soldiers stationing there, killing an Israeli female soldier and wounding others. At least two are in serious condition. The Israelis claimed that the man the identity of the man was revealed from the Shafat refugee camp. The Israeli soldiers succeeded, unfortunately, to arrest four Palestinians. One of them is the brother of this man who carried out the shooting, as the Israeli military is saying. Both all the four Palestinians who were arrested denied any information. They say that they didn't know that the man would be carrying out a shooting. They said that they stopped the vehicle at the checkpoint. He get out of the vehicle and opened fire. All the entrances, we have to say, leading to Shafat refugee camp were completely closed by the Israeli forces. More Israeli soldiers were sent there. Clashes have taken place between Palestinian residents of the Shafat refugee camp as well as the residents of Anata, the nearby Palestinian town, with the Israeli soldiers. Up till the moment, the manhunt is underway and the entrances to Shafat refugee camp and Anata town are completely closed. A number of Palestinian groups said that they are responsible for the shooting, but at the same time, experts and the Israeli military believe that this man carried out the shooting by himself, and they know that he was not affiliated to any of the Palestinian resistance groups.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Mona Kandil there from Occupied Ramallah. Thank you.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Now let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Moti Abu Musaba is a Palestinian political activist that joins us from Gaza City. Also joining us is Mick Napier, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who joins us from Edinburgh. Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Let me first get an idea from you, Mick Napier, about what has occurred. I mean, we're looking at a brazen attack. The person who decided to do this, which is said to be a revenge attack. It's almost confirmed. A correspondent also confirmed that, where an Israeli soldier was killed. The fact that this person took matters into his hands and went out and did this obviously is one side of the story. But the reasons as to why this has occurred is where we'd like to get a reaction from you on this.
Well, reasons work at several different levels. Now, when we talk about a revenge attack, Israel has been on a killing spree, and it believes that it can kill. It's been young teenagers recently they've been focusing on, quite a few of them children. But Israel believes that it can kill these Palestinians with relative impunity in the West Bank, because they have saturated the area with soldiers, with the world's most advanced surveillance equipment. And therefore they think that the Palestinians are, to use the disgusting language of an earlier Israeli general, are like drugged cockroaches in a bottle, which is what they thought they could reduce the Palestinians to. But they're not drugged and they're not cockroaches. And it's very difficult for the Israelis to cope with the kind of resistance which we've just seen, where a heroic young man, possibly not connected to any other resistance groups, but certainly, I would imagine, influenced by the current developments and changes in tactics of those resistance groups, the resurgence, not just in Jenin, but spilling over into other areas in the West Bank. He couldn't help but be lifted by this. And the fact that he's been able, nonchalantly, you would almost imagine that he was trained militarily, but that he could emerge from a car and inflict such damage on this massively highly equipped army, which has been terrorizing the West Bank successfully to a degree for a very long time, is quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. And you have to explain it, not just in terms of whether he himself has suffered family members killed or brutalization. This is the small change of life in the West Bank. But whether he feels that the alternative is simply doom, not just for him personally, but for the Palestinian people. Because the Israelis make no secret that their plan is a Palestine without Palestinians. And therefore, given the lack of any alternative to resistance other than humiliation and degradation, increasing numbers of people are choosing the route of armed resistance. How that will go, it's impossible from my armchair to predict, but it's certainly a devastating surprise for the Israelis that Palestinians, after everything they've been through, still resist, and so successfully.
The point that our guest there from Edinburgh makes, Moti Abu Musaba, is a very important one, I think. And I'm wondering what you think about that. And that is the fact that you have somebody that is not related to any particular resistance group, but is a lone person who has decided to react based on the fact that Israel has killed Palestinians and carried out the operation. And that's quite remarkable, because many are now subscribing to that method. Do you think that this is something that is going to keep on increasing as time goes by?
Yes, first of all, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to join you once again. In fact, there is, I think, a wide consensus that the resistance actions against the Israeli occupation and the recent days actually are remarkably increasing. And in my opinion, there are many, there are multiple reasons behind that. The first one is the ongoing and the relentless Israeli suppression and aggression practice against the Palestinians in the West Bank. Today, as you know, the bloodshedding of the Palestinians there is continued since the beginning of this year. As you have mentioned, that since the beginning of this year, 2022, more than 100 Palestinians were killed and murdered by the Israeli occupation in front of the whole world. Needless to mention, the ongoing raids and the continuous storming of Palestinian cities and villages in the West Bank, especially in Nablus and Jenin City. Actually, this goes hand in hand with the deteriorating situation of the economic conditions and the humanitarian conditions. According to the latest records, the unemployment rate actually surpasses 70% among the Palestinian youths there. So this actually ignites the tension on the West Bank. Actually, let's be clear that on the other hand, beside that or in addition to that, Israel deliberately tries to build more and more settlement. Israel tries to create a new de facto on the ground. There is some important issue and important reason behind that, which is the ongoing Israeli violations practiced in Al-Aqsa Yards, which actually, as you know, adds fuel to the fire in the West Bank, because the Palestinian people there are watching the Israeli provocations against the Palestinian citizens, against the Palestinian women, and elderly there, which actually adds fuel to the fire and increase the tension among those Yazidis. So amid all those provocations, amid all those attacks and aggressions, the Palestinian people have no choice but to resist the Israeli occupation and to defend themselves.
Indeed, those are some very good points that you make in terms of the right to react there. But, you know, what is somewhat interesting here is how the interpretation is made, McNabb, here, when it comes to the way Israel describes the situation. In this case, in point, the Israeli military says that it opens fire only when it's in life-threatening situations. That kind of brings back the explanation given during the last war, where you have the U.S. and the EU come out and say Israel has the right to defend itself. Isn't that code for Israel to shoot and kill?
Of course. And not only will the green light be shown from Washington or Berlin or London, but they will also supply the means for the killing. Look, Israel is very adept at propaganda. It doesn't seem to work with the great majority of people in Europe, actually, but they're still very adept at it. Israel has been caught officers killing children. I myself spoke to the father of a 13-year-old schoolgirl, quite famous was the case, Iman al-Hams, because of an accident recording the soldiers talking. And the officer told his soldiers to kill anything in the area, even if it was 3 years old. And that was played on Israeli television. I was looking through some old anniversaries yesterday and came upon the example. It's quite shocked. I was shocked, but I don't know why, of the Israeli general who found a group of Egyptians during one of the wars, and they were captives, they were quarry workers, they were not soldiers, they were completely unarmed. And the story is not that he killed all of them, he did, he slaughtered these civilians, but that much later he boasted about it in Israeli media, and there was no backlash, there were no charges, no investigation. So if you murder civilians, Egyptian or Palestinian, Lebanese or whatever, and then boast about what you have done in Israel, you can do this with complete impunity. So the Americans have an intelligence agency, so do the British. It's not that they don't know. They know exactly the barbarity of the Israelis. They know this because they've studied it. And for a very short time, the British were on the receiving end of it, very short before they restructured the alliance. So they know exactly what Israel's doing in terms of killing children, deliberately killing children. There have been UN reports in the last couple of years which say very clearly Israel is indiscriminately killing civilians in Gaza at that time and is indiscriminately killing children. During the Great March of Return, the UN reported that Israel was killing journalists, medical workers, and children. And it said, knowing that they were children and knowing who they were. So there's no secret. You don't have to be a radical or a dissident. Anybody who wants to find out can find this out from unimpeachable resources. Sure. What the Palestinians live under is a most barbaric and murderous regime. And that explains one thing. People under colonial domination, the naked violence, let's say, which what colonialism is, many people just try to live, you know. They don't want to fight. There's a minority who want to fight. There's a minority who want to collaborate always. But most people in the middle just try to feed their families and live and put up with some humiliation. But they begin to resist in the mass when they realize that they cannot live in this way, that the Israelis will not allow them to live in this way, that the humiliation and the killings will be incessant and will increase until Palestinians are driven out. So we can look at the tactics of the resistance. They're very impressive. They're changing in a way that they've evolved tactics, which are keeping the Israelis wrong-footed. But the rising resistance can be laid at the door, one of the Israelis and two of the indomitable Palestinian ability to absorb tremendous punishment and still continue to resist. Can I just add one thing?
Go ahead.
100 Palestinians killed, and they've managed to kill, I think, 19 or 20 Israelis. Now, that's horrible, and I don't want to sound callous. But, you know, normally in an anti-colonial resistance, it can be 100 to 1. In Vietnam, it was 60 to 1. You know, in Algeria, it was roughly 100 Algerians killed for every French occupier. So what the Palestinian resistance is achieving at very high cost, I don't want to minimize the cost, is quite remarkable.
Yeah, you both have talked about this figure, which is accurate in terms of 100 being killed. And what is really, really sad about this figure, that this is five times as many Palestinians that have been killed in the same period in 2021, where we mentioned 100. So bad that the UN Human Rights Chief, Michel Bachelet, has expressed alarm at the high number of Palestinians, including children, that have been killed and or injured in the occupied Palestinian territory this year. Muta Abu Musaba, why do you think that Israel has put his killing machine, as some call it, in high gear this year?
Yes, as you know, that the Israeli occupation forces are trying to impose a new de facto on the ground. They are racing counter the clock to impose the new realities on the ground, to seize more Palestinian lands. Armed with the open American support and the abhorrent silence of the international community towards those crimes. So Israel, as good as possible, tries to suppress more Palestinians, to steal more Palestinian lands, trying to exploit the tumultuous region and the instability and the global fronts, especially with regard to the Ukrainian and Russian crisis nowadays. But anyway, as you know, that Palestinians would never allow the Israelis the Israeli occupation to keep committing its crimes without any punishment or without any response. And actually, what is going on the ground with this regard actually reveals the hypocrisy of the international community and the U.S. administration that speaks up when it comes to the Ukrainian issue, when it comes to the Ukrainian regions annexed by the Russian forces and the Russian government. They are speaking up and trying to denounce that kind of annexation. But when it comes to the Palestinian people, we are witnessing how the Israeli occupation forces are annexing the Palestinian or have been annexing the Palestinian lands for more than seven decades without having any response from the international community or the U.S. administration. Actually, this reveals clearly how hypocrite and how biased the international community to the Israeli occupation at the expense of the Palestinian people. Today, the Palestinian people, amid all that kind of bias, have no choice but to resist the Israeli occupation and to prevent the Israeli occupation from committing its crimes.
Well, this is the problem here, McNapier, that I see it being a problem of perception, that the Israelis, backed by their media conglomerates that they control, always paint the picture that they are being the victim. For example, if you have a Palestinian that attacks them, that Palestinian is called a terrorist. But when you have one of their security sources or forces, kill a Palestinian, then they're defending Israel's security. Our guests have talked about the Ukraine conflict. Again, a matter of perception. Who's being the aggressor there? Is Russia being the aggressor, or are they being the ones that were being provoked and being cornered after 6 years of a war, for example? And I'm using that just as a comparative analysis there. This view of the perception is what we're looking at. But do you think slowly but surely Israel is losing that battle because so many people are becoming aware of the Palestinian cause?
No, I don't think that Israel is slowly losing the battle. I don't think so at all. I think if you study the numbers, polls commissioned by the European Union, recent polls in America, for that matter, in the last few weeks, Israel long ago lost the battle for public opinion. And it's very important to note that. It's not what I want to believe. It's what anybody who looks at the at the results of public opinion studies must conclude that by their resistance, Palestinians have been able to defeat Israel in the court of public opinion. Now, I don't mean in terms of what's allowed to be discussed publicly in Britain or Germany or America. That's a different matter. People who I have spent years in court on criminal charges for Palestine advocacy. There's an attempt to silence people here, just as there is to call human rights groups in the West Bank terrorist groups. Israel does it there. Our governments do it here. But in terms of what people believe, they already are deeply suspicious of Israel. And opinion poll after opinion poll shows that Israel is deeply unpopular, viewed as sinister, viewed as a thug and a bully by popular opinion. Now, that needs to be translated into active energy, boycott, divestment and sanctions around the world. But that's the reality we start with. So I don't think Israel's slowly losing it. It's very important to understand they lost it a long time ago and they have never recovered public support. It's gone. It's gone completely.
Okay. We need to talk about the Islamic Jihad. They actually have supported what has happened because of the bravery of the person that came out and did this. So my question to you, Muti Abu Musab, it was just the founding anniversary that was held a few days back in Gaza by the Islamic Jihad, and on display were some new military equipment and some other various forms of military equipment in addition to the new ones. Are we looking at Israel taking note of the Islamic Jihad, its strength that's been elevated, increased compared to the past, including other resistance groups like Hamas, and seeing that, you know, they are not at a strong point when it comes to the armed aspect, when it comes to, for example, resistance groups vis-a-vis Israel and their forces?
Yes, as you know that today the Palestinian resistance factions actually are standing united in the front of the Israeli occupation, and they are races counter the clock to develop their abilities and to enhance their abilities to confront the Israeli occupation crimes. Today it's just a matter of time for any kind of escalation to break out between the Palestinian resistance factions and the Israeli occupation forces, especially amid the ongoing and the relentless Israeli crimes and violations, which actually makes any kind of a new escalation or a new round of escalation is so close. Amid all these conditions, the Palestinian resistance factions, especially or led by Hamas movement and the Islamic Jihad, are obliged to be united in front of the Israeli occupation to have a strong unity. We as Palestinians realize that we cannot face the Israeli occupation separately, okay, or divided. The strategic choice we have here is to keep maintaining our unity in front of the Israeli occupation and to develop our abilities to confront the Israeli occupation forces.
Thank you for that. Sorry, we're fresh out of time. That's Mick Napier there, Scottish-Palestine Solidarity Campaign. Thank you. Muti Abu Musab, a pleasure. Palestinian political activist from Gaza City. Thank you so much. And we had Mona Kandil at the top of the hour, a correspondent from Ramallah. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tapway and the team, it's goodbye until next time.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, consequences of disorder. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle. When we talk about the Islamic lifestyle, obviously we know that Islam gives an importance to the discipline, and it is against the disorder what people have in their life. From the consequences of the disorder, we can say that the consequences can be, one of them is violation of human rights. We know that when someone is have disorder in his life, he does not have the discipline in his life. Therefore, when he goes to the society, when he is having the social life, he might violate the human rights. He might violate the rights of the others who are living in the same society. And this is not a good thing. Obviously, this is something when we are violating the rights of the others, we are answerable and we are accountable on the day of judgment. Islam has given rights to everyone, every single person, and the society also has its rights. The people living in the same society, the trees, the animals, especially the human beings, they have the rights upon us, and therefore we should not ruin or violate their rights, and we need to take care of what we are doing. And therefore Imam Ali has also said that one of the reasons that a person becomes alone, a person who does not have the respect in the society, is that when he does not take care of the rights of his brothers in the society. Imam Sadiq has said, "Tarkul huquqi madallatun." When someone violates the human rights, he becomes humiliated in the society and he does not have any respect. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of consequences of disorder in the Islamic lifestyle. And we said that one of the consequences is the violation of the human rights. And therefore, we must take care of the other's rights. For example, if I am a teacher, I'm teaching something. If I do my things properly on time and I'm not violating the rights of the students, that when they ask questions, I answer them efficiently. When they are giving a kind of exam or test, I'm checking them properly. Maybe when it's my lecture time, I'm not spending doing my personal things in the work time. Maybe it does not, like this point is related to every one of us who are working in different places. Maybe I'm sitting in the office. Maybe I am working in a garage, maybe I'm working as a teacher, as a lawyer, I don't know. Wherever you work, you are an accountant, you're working as a manager or associate. If we are spending doing our personal things at the work time, then obviously we are violating the rights of the others at our workplace. And this is a kind of a sin that I'm getting paid for what I meant to do, and then I'm spending that time in doing my personal things. That is another case. If the employer has allowed the employee to spend some time on the phone, or maybe if it doesn't matter in the eyes of employer, that is something else. That is a different case. But if they do not allow us, then I should not spend my time or waste my time when I'm working. Therefore, it is important to take care of the rights of the others and to not to violate. But if I have a disorder in my life, if I am, I do not have discipline, then obviously, ultimately, I am violating the human rights and I should avoid this according to Islam. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The British government started the week with a big question hanging over its head: how to fund its billions of pounds worth of tax cuts announced last month. While it continues to tout the benefits of its controversial growth plan, in the real world, the central bank has had to intervene a third time to try to stabilize the financial markets, less than 2 weeks after Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng's announcement of his mini-budget sparked market turmoil and blistering political attacks.
Will the Chancellor now put aside his pride, do the right thing for our country, end this trickle-down nonsense, and reverse the budget?
The response from the Finance Minister, defiant, despite his recent U-turn on tax cuts for the highest earners.
She should get her facts right. The IMF today have said that our growth is going up.
What the IMF has also said is that high levels of inflation will persist longer in Britain than in almost all other advanced economies.
The answer they're going to try and give to this is to say, actually get the economy to grow. But it's very difficult to get the economy to grow if the rest of the world economy is actually shrinking at the moment. So if we're by cutting taxes, they say we'll get things going. Well, actually, at the moment, what they're trying to do is actually slow the economy down to control inflation. That's what the Bank of England's doing. But the government is moving in the opposite direction and adding inflation to it. This doesn't make sense to us.
The Chancellor hasn't made it clear where the cuts will fall. The National Health Service has the largest budget, but cutting that isn't realistic. The Prime Minister is committed to increase defense spending, which leaves other areas, such as education and welfare, looking vulnerable again.
Well, that was done before, when we had to go through a period of austerity, and that was very unpopular indeed. If they're going to go through that again, they're going to be very unpopular, and it's not going to be accepted, I don't think. So it's going to be interesting to see which bit they're going to try and cut. Or are they really just going to bank on growth, in which case we can't see how they're going to do it.
More than 24 million Britons live on some sort of benefit. A further reduction is unthinkable.
The UK economy shrank unexpectedly in August. Inflation is at nearly 10%, interest rates are up, pension funds are on the brink, faith in the government shaken. And with the Bank of England's intervention in the markets ending this week, is another U-turn by the government in the offing. Saeed Puraza, London.
A general strike and civil disobedience have been observed in occupied East Al-Quds and in many areas of the occupied West Bank to reject Israel's siege on Shafat refugee camp and Anata town northeast Al-Quds. Since Saturday, the Israeli military has kept over 130,000 Palestinians in the two areas under forced lockdown after sealing all military checkpoints. The siege has disrupted residents' vital interests. It has prevented them from accessing the rest of the city for works, school and medical care and other necessities in severe violation of their basic rights. Israeli military says the move comes as they are searching for a Palestinian gunman who killed an Israeli female soldier at a checkpoint at the entrance to Shafat on Saturday.
What goes on in these actions by the Palestinians are a normal response to the Israeli brutality and aggression against Shafat refugee camp and Annata town. The strike is meant to lift the siege imposed on Shafat and Annata, Al-Quds, Qalandia refugee camp, and other towns. We all responded to the call of civil disobedience and strike.
Also on Wednesday, the Israeli forces imposed a closure on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, a day after an Israeli soldier was shot dead near an illegal settlement in the area. In addition to the major military checkpoints surrounding the city, dirt mounds have been placed on the Nablus area roads by military bulldozers to prevent Palestinians to use alternative exits. A manhunt is still underway to find the shooter. Israeli media revealed that the military was considering launching a large-scale operation in the northern West Bank in a bid to end the recent phenomena in struggle, armed struggle.
The resistance of the Palestinian people, and especially the armed resistance, as it happened in Jenin, and it moved to Nablus, and now from Nablus, we hope that it will be spreading all over the West Bank in order to resist this occupation. The phenomena that we are witnessing today in Nablus, this is the new way for the Palestinians to express their anger of this occupation, especially and particularly that all other political solutions is totally failed.
In recent months, the Israeli army have launched near-daily raids to the West Bank, mainly in Jenin and Nablus, where Palestinian armed resistance is becoming more organized and new groups of fighters have been formed, the most popular now known as the Lion's Den.
Despite Tel Aviv's heavy-handed crackdown and collective punishment of Palestinians, they are keeping up their resistance against the regime using different tools. Every day, the Palestinians prove that the Israeli military's aggressive measures have failed to weaken their struggle. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
The EU's Temporary Protection Directive has been specifically activated to help Ukrainian refugees. It means they are guaranteed housing, healthcare, education and welfare payments in any of the bloc's 27 member states.
I would like today to announce that the Temporary Protection Directive will continue to be in place at least until March 2024.
The European Commission has also launched a scheme to make it easier for millions of Ukrainians in the EU to find jobs. At the same time, thousands of refugees fleeing other conflict zones continue to sleep on the streets throughout the bloc. Also, as the cost of living crisis in the EU intensifies, activists say the bloc's own citizens are not receiving adequate support.
Nowadays we see that people can be homeless and have a job. There's in-work homelessness, but there's also groups that are higher risk of losing their job from one day to the next.
As the war in Ukraine continues, the EU is pondering a ninth round of sanctions against Russia. Moscow's ally Belarus is also very likely to be targeted for cooperating with Russia.
All these steps, especially by the Belarusian regime, are against the will of the majority of the population and will be met with new and strong restrictive measures from the side of the European Union.
There have been renewed calls in the European Parliament for less focus on sanctions, less focus on arming Ukraine, and more focus on peace talks.
We need diplomats to finally take action. This is the view of 77% of all Germans. Political offers need to be made in order to encourage both sides to lay down their weapons.
According to many analysts, Western sanctions against Russia are clearly not working. Otherwise, a ninth package would not be on the agenda. In fact, economists say the current sanctions are hurting EU citizens far more than had been anticipated. Inflation and interest rates continue to rise with no clear end in sight. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A new study covering a huge range of foreign policy issues found that a whopping 79% of Americans believe that the United States should continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question is there such broad support across generations and political affiliations.
Most Americans are heavily fatigued by endless wars and, you know, U.S. Foreign policy adventurism overseas, and, you know, really want political leadership, regardless of which party we're talking about, that is concerned with, you know, more pressing domestic needs.
The study's authors even declared that politicians who criticize diplomatic efforts with Iran are out of step with many of their voters. Joe Biden campaigned on a diplomatic return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program. In a major backtracking, not only has he not continued to uphold the United States' end of the deal, but he has imposed round after round of new sanctions on Iran. From the Washington Beltway to Hollywood, Iranophobia, Islamophobia, and violent belligerence towards Tehran has been pushed by America's political, media, and academic elites. However, the poll seems to prove that these messages have been emphatically rejected by the average American.
The level of sway that the defense industry has over Washington, the defense lobby, and the military-industrial complex, that's who the two major parties are beholden to. There's no real significant difference between the Republicans or the Democrats. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Iran deal. That's a perfect example.
The poll noted that for the fifth straight year, the percentage of Americans who think the U.S. should negotiate directly with adversaries has grown, now reaching 65%. Two-thirds of America supports the country's total withdrawal from Afghanistan. 40% of people declaring an opinion believe that the U.S. has not responded well to the unrest in Ukraine. The only foreign policy issue which gained as much support as diplomacy with Iran was that 80% of Americans demand more congressional oversight in the executive branch's ability to unilaterally declare wars. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
The 2022 EU Ambassadors Conference was launched on Monday in Brussels against the backdrop of the war in Ukraine and its global consequences. Ambassadors from the EU's 145 delegations and offices around the world took part.
This is a perfect storm. First, prices increasing. Everybody's running to increase interest rates. This will bring us to a world recession.
Tensions between the West and Russia are rising. One official in Moscow claims a truck was used to attack the Crimean Bridge last Saturday and had travelled through EU nation Bulgaria. The European Commission was asked to respond.
There are so many things coming out of Moscow and from these official so-called places which don't really merit any commentary. I mean, let me recall that the Crimea is Ukraine.
No one has yet claimed responsibility, but some analysts say the move was a strategic mistake.
The threats of a nuclear conflict are becoming more and more real. And I think it wasn't wise, it was really provocative to attack the bridge, especially military. Whoever did it, they haven't reached any significant result because the bridge resumed functioning the very same day.
12 months ago, EU agency the European Court of Auditors determined Ukraine is corrupt to the core. Despite this, the nation is set to become part of the EU's long-term budget. The European Commission says Kiev needs 3.5 billion euro per month to run the country.
Since the beginning of the war, we have supported Ukraine financially with Esteem Europe with up to 19 billion euros. This is not including the military capability and equipment support.
Fighting intensified on Monday as Russia's military struck Kiev and other Ukrainian cities. The latest position from the West's perspective is due to become clearer later this week when a meeting of NATO defence ministers takes place here in the Belgian capital. Also, an EU leader summit is due to take place here at the end of next week. Analysts are not anticipating there will be many references made to peace talks. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Mi hanno A study presented by the Bank of Italy on Monday raised the alarm on the Italian company's sentiment on the future. According to the report, based on information gathered between August 15 and September 15, spiraling inflation and uncertainty linked to the conflict in Ukraine have badly dented optimism. The Bank of Italy surveyed companies in the industrial and service sectors with at least 50 employees.
Bank of Italy's data was somehow predictable. One just needs to talk to people to realize how worrying the situation is. Maybe we must be aware that the financialization of the economy, a long-standing issue, is aggravating the economic situation and that companies must stop seeking high profits in a short span of time.
A third of the firms surveyed said difficulties related to rising energy costs had worsened in the previous 3 months, sparking a downward revision in the investment plans for the remainder of the year. The war between Ukraine and Russia has made an Italian energy crisis much worse. Italy received 40% of its gas imports before the conflict from Russia.
We are witnessing a spike in energy prices, which is only partially due to a shortage of supplies and also has roots in speculative strategies which threaten thousands of companies and alarm families.
The leader of a right-wing coalition that won elections about 2 weeks ago, Giorgia Meloni, is likely to become Italy's next prime minister. Meloni will face no shortage of challenges, from the budget and recovery plans to finding unity with allies and deciding how to handle the Ukraine-Russia war. So far, the Mario Draghi's government has spent 66 billion euros in an attempt to shield firms and families from surging energy costs. Italy's finances are set to be further put to the test as analysts predict the next government will be forced to increase fiscal aid or even to resort to a budgetary slippage. Max Civilli, Rome.
Dressed in their Sunday's best and singing words of praise, thousands of Muslims from around the world descended upon the northwest English town of Bolton to celebrate a historical figure whose legacy transcends time and space. Prophet Muhammad, his birthday called the Mawlid, celebrated in the third month of the Islamic calendar.
For these Muslims and millions of others around the world, Prophet Muhammad is an ethical and spiritual role model, and commemorating his life is another way of keeping his memory alive in the collective Muslim consciousness.
And it is that and his many other characteristics which attract these Muslims to the joyous occasion. The young are eager to tell us what the Prophet means to them.
Inspiration, and undoubtedly the most honest person you can ever think of, the best of all mankind, and the one you should actually truly believe in. Like, you can say, I believe in this person because he's a good man, good job. This person is the one you can really say, and with your heart and faith, say, I believe in him.
He means everything to me. He showed me how to live my life, how to treat other people. You know, how the way I'd want to be treated is the same way I treat other people.
As well as making the Prophet and his legacy a constant in the lives of Muslims, the event sets out to change misconceptions among non-Muslims in the wake of insults against the Prophet in Europe in recent years and increased religious hate crimes on his followers.
Our religion that the beloved Prophet Muhammad has given it is a religion of peace, love and harmony, and it's to build unity and community, to bring the communities together with love and harmony.
At the same time as their female counterparts celebrating in a nearby building, the men engage in prayers and reciting the Quran, followed by delicious free food, a symbol of the Holy Prophet's largesse. Said Puriza, Bolton.
The Silicon Valley of Iran, Paradis Technology Park, is home to heavyweight tech firms, from fintech to medical and robotics companies. The 20th Paradis Annual Summit, Paradis Park acknowledged the top brands that have made major contributions to the country's economic growth.
We produce mining, drilling, and extraction machinery, including road headers, side dump loaders, conveyors, bolts, as well as junction boxes, Our products are built based on international standards. We're planning to export to other countries, starting from Turkey.
We're producing all of the supplements and medicines that have a high degree of technology based on biotechnology or human medicines, veterinary medicines, and so on.
Located in west of Tehran, Paradis Technology Park was launched in 2001 with the aim of offering financial and consulting support to small enterprises and commercializing their products. Currently, it has 400 companies under its belt, many of which have turned into tech giants.
Inside the park, we try to provide many kind of facilities and services for these companies. Some of them are professional services, including, for example, some kind of consultancies like as legal and financial consultancies, providing some kind of services for them for...
Paradis Technology Park predicts that this year, the total export of products from its firms will hit the $50 million mark.
These companies now are exporting to more than 30 countries all over the world, and the number of products which are exporting now is more than 100 high-tech products. And this is a brilliant achievement for us in this situation, and also according to the sanction, these companies now are exporting to other countries.
With U.S. sanctions still haunting the Iranian economy, the country has in recent years attached greater significance to domestic brands. The government is increasingly supporting companies active in non-oil sectors as part of efforts to reduce its dependence on crude revenues, which have faced a slump in the wake of U.S. sanctions.
Each one of these brands started out as a small startup and later grew to make a name for themselves in the market. Paradis Tech Park says it continues to support knowledge-based companies and help them develop, as it believes this will lead to a more resilient economy that will be safe from the ups and downs of the oil sector. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Green flags reading, "We are here, O Prophet of God," decorated the capital Sana'a to mark Prophet Muhammad's birth. Those who attended said this year's celebration is of high significance, given the perilous times Yemen and the rest of the Muslim world are experiencing. Some participants argued that there is a war being waged against the message of Prophet Muhammad and those who follow him. The leader of Ansarullah, Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi, also addressed the nation, calling for Islamic unity and adherence to the holy book of Quran and the message of Islam in an effort to improve the Muslim world. He condemned those who are in favor of normalizing ties with Israel and deemed them as traitors of Allah and His Messenger. Al-Houthi also called on the West to end their animosity towards God and all of His messengers. The Ansarullah leader also called on the Saudi-led coalition to end their war on Yemen, while also renewing his call to Yemenis to continue their resistance.
I call on the coalition of aggressors to end their war and lift the blockade and to end their occupation of our land. Just as I call on our Yemeni people to continue their resistance against our enemies for as long as their aggression continues. We consider this to be an Islamic duty and a holy war that we must commit to.
The birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad comes 1 week after the ceasefire between Yemen and Saudi Arabia officially ended, without reaching an agreement to end the war. Since then, Yemen's Ansarullah movement has sent numerous warnings to Saudi Arabia and the UAE to end the war and lift the blockade, or else face, quote, unprecedented consequences.
While millions of Yemenis take to the streets to commemorate the birth anniversary of God's final messenger, the message being delivered here is that the Maulid is not only a day of celebration, it is also a day of resistance against the decades of Western neocolonialism aimed at dominating Yemen and the rest of the Muslim world. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners of Arab English Radio, welcome to another episode of Back to Reality. Well, I am Asma, your humble host. This is another time that I have the honor to be your humble host. I have studied English literature, and here I am at your service. Here with me, I have two very dear guests. I hope they could introduce themselves to you.
Assalamu alaikum. I am Bita, and you know, I'm really honored with this pleasure to be here at your service. I am a medical student in Iran. Yeah.
And Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear friends. I'm Zainab Sadat, and it's quite a pleasure to be here today. Mm-hmm. I have my MA in TFL, teaching English as a foreign language, and I hope to have a really enchanting discussion today.
In today's episode of Back to Reality, we're going to have something very much interesting, and I guess it's everyone's favorite, because I'm going to let the beans out. We are going to talk about judging, and I guess there is no one in this world who could claim that I have never judged anyone or anything in my life. Mm-hmm. Because it's something that has been put in our nature.
Yes.
We have a brain, and that brain has got some cells, and those cells, whenever they see something, they start to process it.
Exactly. Our brain starts processing information as soon as we see a person. Mm-hmm. And, that's the job of our brain.
You know, if you allow me, I want to elaborate this process more for you.
Yeah, please.
There is a delicate difference between judging someone and having a special background about their appearance, their way of behaving, or something else. I mean that when, for example, you judge someone, you see someone and decide that person, whether that person is good or not.
Yeah.
But when you have some background and some mindset or, you know, point of view about someone, this is another story.
If you have a background about that person,
okay,
still it is called judging.
It is not.
Yes, it is.
I do not agree with that. Judging,
we are here to disagree.
You are determined to tell someone that this person is something, whether it is bad or not. But when you have a background, it's, you know, your own thought, and you have that doubt about your thought that, okay, you know, because I had this experience in my
interaction
life,
with that person.
Yeah, interaction with other person, and also in my communications, I think because this person behaves like this, you know, for example, he would be like this or like that or something. And this is another story, I think. For example, you know, judgment is not something good, as you know.
Okay, Bita, let me just ask you a question right now.
Okay.
Just to be honest, hasn't it been most of the time right that when you have an impression about someone, it turns out to be right?
Yes.
Many times.
Many times. Okay,
so I'm a judgy person, and I think that judgment has always came to my help.
So what, you're telling me that judging is something good? And you want to convince me that, okay, you can judge everybody?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we are not perfect creatures. The ability to judge, I call it an ability because it really is an ability.
It is. I do agree with that.
Because some people lack it. And you can see it from their decisions.
You know what? Some people think that you have to be perfect to judge someone, but I do not agree with that.
Of course. Let's go for a little break. We'll be back in no time. Dear audience, stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Zainab, what are your points?
Judging a book by its cover
is not a good thing. Well, that's an idiom and that's all.
So before that, I want to say that just as you said, you know, when you see someone, whether you have a background information about him
or not,
or
you're going to have an impression.
You will have an impression.
But where does this impression come from? You know what
from
I mean?
From my knowledge of human beings. No, from my knowledge of human beings.
For example, you see someone, you judge her.
See, Bita, when we are
this
very
is appearance.
Much
this is
young.
Absolute appearance.
See, when we are very much young,
okay,
when we are at the age of before 10, I'm talking about before 10 or before 15 even.
Okay.
When we see people, we do not judge them so much. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know.
Do we?
Somehow.
So our brain has not started its complicated process yet.
That's what I'm trying to say. Mm-hmm. Because after a certain age, we come to know more of life. We have more of experience. we have this knowledge about human beings and how the ways of life is working around us. So we start to judge.